We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Hallowmay.
Welcome to Hallowmay. This is Lore Keepers, The Boundless Venture, the world-renowned podcasting opus wherein the richest history, the richest tapestry of lore in human history, is sung into being before your very ear holes. I'm Carter.
And I'm Frank.
Whether you melt jewelry in volcanoes that burn steel to usurp the Carrion throne, or crit on your Grey Warden to floss, sit a while by our fire. Ho, 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 weary wanderer, and let us weave you a tale. This half fortnight, we are talking about Netflix's new hit show, sponsoring us, Shadow and Bone. Frank, take it away.
Kind of. Hey, Carter, really quick. So you've been, your mic has been kind of like garbly. Can you try leaving the channel and just rejoining and seeing if that fixes
sure.
it? Thanks.
I've returned.
I think you sound clear.
Perhaps I can sing you a song that is clear.
Nope, sounds no different. That's fine, whatever. We'll just keep going with it. I can still totally hear you. Like, that's not an issue.
I just hope it's not recording garbled.
It probably isn't. I guess we'll find out.
We certainly will. I don't see why it would.
I mean, with the production values on this show, i.e. non-existent, you know, I'm pretty sure our site's been down for several... Dude, I don't even know, man. It's just like, hey, you know what? Here's the one thing I know for sure. Ava. You can't stop the signal. That will not end.
The spice
regardless
must
of
flow,
whether the,
Frank.
What? Yeah, the spice must flow. Whether the podcast descriptions are coherent, whether the, you know, whether the upload times are consistent or I miss days, whether the site works and the world anvil is up or Record the Lore Keeper ever comes back. Spoiler, it will actually be coming back.
Sunday,
you know,
Sunday,
there
Sunday.
Will always be a new feed, like episode in the feed at some point. And hopefully it will even be correctly tempoed so that it's not hyper fast.
It might even be legible for your ear holes.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So this week, Carter's talking about Shadow and Bone because I brought up an idea to him of something I've kind of been playing with. So I mentioned to him. Mistborn, which of course you know, can thank Carter for introducing me to Mistborn. Very good,
the Branderson
book series, ooh. The Branderson series. I mean, and you know, like if you remember that whole like text train I sent you at as I was like finishing the final book, yep. And I was just like, this is ascendant. This is like truly like what this is what I read for. This is why I like engage in fantasy. Is that shit?
Just Branderson
amazing.
Whacking himself off, and you're like, this is what I'm here for.
Yes, I am here to watch Brandon Sanderson masturbate in front of
yep.
me into a book.
Yep.
No, it's very good. But okay, so but in Mistborn, the magic system that exists is like basically different people are born with these different abilities, and it's like elemancy. There's also ferrochemy and hemallergy, but like I don't know if we're gonna get into that as much. Although we might. I'm not to give away the hand too much. But in addition to that, there is also other systems that exist that still that kind of have this born with a gift vibe to it.
Bah.
Like, so like everything that we explore on the normal, like in the conventional sense, there are a lot of different. You can basically say that you know, like D&D, and because it's you know, it began as a D&D you know project. Hallowmay is a world that has many different magical systems, right? In some books, you might have that patronage is the only way that you'd have magic, right? Like people seek out patrons a la warlock style, and that's where they get their magic from. Or maybe it's faith-based magic, or maybe it's wizards, or maybe, you know, but in D&D, it's like, oh, all of these are true, right? That is true up until a point, which is you don't have, the one thing you can't do with that is have exclusive narratives. You can't have magic only be one thing. That's the one thing you can't do in a narrative where, like, there are a lot of different magic systems is say magic is exclusive to behaving this one way. And so if you have, like, the kind of the chosen person, you know, born with a gift vibe, you can't, like, that's not nearly as special or unique or doing the same kind of flavor that you have in a Mistborn. And which, by the way, some of you are probably, like, thinking, like, why doesn't he just say Avatar? I just said it. Avatar, The Last Airbender, right? Like, there are people who are earthbenders, waterbenders, firebenders, and airbenders. And, like, they're not the only people, or like, it's not that everybody in the Fire Nation can firebend, but the people of the Fire Nation, they can firebend, whereas, like, you know, the people of, like, the Earth Nation can't. They can do earthbending. And only one person has access to all four. So where am I going with this? Well, I wanted to see if we did a Helluming equivalent of this, and Shadow and Bone. The reason why I bring it up is it seems like that's how magic works in that show. Now, granted, I've only seen the first episode and a half of the TV show, and I haven't read any of the books. So what do I know? But, like, this isn't something that just exists in a couple of different worlds. This is something that, like, shows up in a fair, you know, many different kinds of, like, you know, magical circumstances and in, like, TV shows, books, etc. And I always think it's a really fun concept when it is deployed. So my question was, if it exists, if we were to do that same thing of, like, the, you know, born with it magic, and that's the only form of magic that works. I think that's one of the key tenets here that I wanna stick to is, in this realm, in this closed system where people are born this way, and this is the way that magic works, only people who have access to it in this one way are people who can cast spells, or if there are people who are outside of the system, they're seen as very much othered, and it's like a really weird thing for a warlock to show up or a wizard. Like there might be a few on a continent spanning like space that the people behave that way. Second thing is like, if it is exclusive, not everybody has it. Only some people are born with it. And I'm thinking like it, you know, we could do a fun thing with this is if we are, my thought was maybe we associate it with the nine flow. Maybe it's that one out of every nine people has access to one of these, you know, abilities. And then, you know, and of those nine, there's like, you know, one ninth who, you know, who, basically just saying that, you know, one of every nine people have access to it. But there's a lot of ground to cover here. And to be clear, I don't think we're going to get through all of it in one episode. We might have to do a two-parter or just revisit it later. But I don't know, Carter, where do you think, what would be good things to establish here before we kind of start talking about this formally?
So I will say that we have an option to either make this into a different place and kind of fill out the place as we fill out the system, or if we put it on top of an existing place, such as a rune, we could pay more attention maybe to the system and already have some things to pull off of and riff off of. But we'd have to, you know, have to form it to fit, as it were. So,
yeah.
If we were to go with a rune, we could see, like, you know, obviously the one in nine wouldn't be exactly how we wanted to do it, because we've already established, like, people developing powers that are unique are typically because of their interactions with cacophony.
Yeah. Cacophony has like its interactions, and there's also other things like Arun has
the rarity of wizards. There's not a lot of wizards. Mostly it's druids who can cast spells.
Yeah, there's a greater amount of like druidic interactions. There is sort of like that naturalistic magic. So I think I'm leaning away from incorporating it into a rune, mostly just because a rune already has so many things going on at once. Like it's got the Outriders, it has the forgetting, it has cacophony, it has, you know, these like giant you know, monster sized creatures
rich.
And the
rich.
The rich.
It's
Ritual. Yeah, it's got a lot of stuff already going on. And I think that I see this more as an opportunity to forge new ground and potentially, like, you know, kind of explore what's a different way where, you know, the nine flow interacts with reality, and you know, we could have a whole different lore related. Now, I mean, obviously the question is one of, like, we need to establish setting, and I think that's kind of where you're going with this. Yes. And the question is we could potentially set it as, like, in classic Halloumian fashion, we could set it by place or by time or by both. You know, like, we could say it's, there might be a specific Avum where the nine flow ceases to operate in other ways, and then for this period, it only operates in this one specific way. Or maybe it's, you know, that the nine flow, you know, has always operated this one specific way, but it's only in this one place. And, like, outside of this place, those people lose access to their abilities, and other people lose access to their abilities when they enter that realm. And so it's like this kind of mutually exclusion zone. That could be potentially something interesting.
So here's a question for
you. I just had a thought.
If we're going to set it go ahead. Somewhere, it feels to me, given how different it is, it should be someplace we haven't been to.
It's kind of what I'm thinking.
So, do we have an Eastern continent? And I'm not saying we should go, like, Wushu or Wuxia, whatever the D&D, like...
Oh, like Wuxia? If you mean a continent that, like, specifically evokes, like, Eastern Asian fantasy vibes...
I mean, like, do we have a continent we're not using?
Oh, well, I mean, Kotara, the northern half of Kotara is Orun, right?
Oh, we could use
but the southern half of that supercontinent has been unexplored. So yeah, we definitely could use that. There's also a couple of, like, I think Australian-sized continents. There's also the north half of Umdara that extends up and over the pole that has, you know, right, like, there is dry land that exceeds over the pole, and then you can come back down on the
there
south
is
the other
north
side
pole.
That we haven't really built out. So there is, yes, there is. So there is, like, areas like there that we could definitely place stuff. And I kind of like the idea of doing it something in southern, like, southern Kotara, but I also had a different idea that I think could make this kind of cool, depending on what we want to do with it.
What is your different idea, Frank, so I can reject it utterly?
So... if we had it be time related, we could do something that we haven't done before, and we could take a part of Halloumian, the nature of the Halloumian timeline that we've talked about but never really explored in a ton of detail, which is, we've mentioned this before, when an Avum ends and a new Avum begins, it's usually not a singular event, right? There's usually either a little bit of, like, crossing over of timelines, of the way that people talk about the eras, and, like, the official date of one being like, well, that might have been determined hundreds of years after the fact, and, like, somebody kind of picked an arbitrary time or said, like, you know what, this was important to our people and we're the ones making the calendar, so we said this is when the new era started, right? Or... as another big thing is that events aren't something that, it's not events, it's periods that are in between the Avum, right? So you have, like, for instance, the Ash Curse. It was something that, like, yes, it was an event, but really it was a period that lasted for about 100 years of uncountable history, because it was, you know, everything was in chaos for that time. We think it's about 100 years, right? Or the whelming being something that occurred between Avum Secunda and Avum Tertius that was about 400 to 700 years. And, like, I think that there's, like, a static number that we could land on. We just haven't yet, but, like, you know, we could say it was 562 years or something.
And a half.
It's not that nobody knows, it's just that we haven't decided on that number. And then between Avum Quartus and Avum Pentus, there is also a period, like, a shift there, that is, like, the forgotten years, or the hidden years, the ones that, like, were frozen in time, where, like, the dragons were basically eating up all of the Dinjir, right? Or consuming their energies. And so, like, each of these periods has these space, and I was kind of thinking, like, what if we took one of those periods and said that this, that for that period of time, magic behaved differently? And like wizards and other people woke up one day and like literally ceased, like magic ceased to function the way it was. And on that same day, new people were being born that had access to magic in an entirely different way. And I was kind of like, what if we placed it in between Avum Tertius and Cordis? Like something about the way that the strife spire, like fully inverting, and like the when that happens, magic and the nine flow breaks, and then like there is this new form that exists that only comes for like newborns. And so there's this period of about 10 to 15 years where people think that magic is just dead. And then like over time, people are like, wait, maybe magic isn't dead, but it's completely changed. And then at the end of that period, when something happens and Avum Cordis is happening in full swing, like it's like it's encapsulating and then it inverts again and magic returns to the way it previously was working. Although, you know, obviously strife is now a part of the equation and it complicates things. But I don't know. I think I was like, what if we do something like that? What do you
when
think?
Is the second casualty?
I think that is the second casualty. I think that's between Avum Tertius and Avum Cordis, right? So like you have the Dingir entering into the world, you have the strife, I can't remember what we figured out there in terms of like one causing the other. Maybe it was that the Dingir came into the world because of strife, or maybe it was just that, like we've talked about, the Avum sort of wanting to occur in a certain yes. way. But I think that's the second casualty.
So it could be the arrival of the Dingir, not necessarily the strife, that causes magic to act mm-hmm. strangely. And the Dingir could be like,
right.
have these powers as well, if you wanted to do that.
I mean, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's the only people who have magical powers during that short period are the Dingir themselves. And it's not just them. I mean, we've talked about them entering through the gate of Rukin, right? Like sort of stepping yep. out of reality and into... Oh, wait. Maybe we have kind of a Pharaoh Kemi and Allomancy kind of vibes going on there, where the Dingir that walk through the gate are of one nature. But that doesn't mean that the aspects have stopped being born into the world the way that they conventionally have yes. been, right? And so maybe those aspects are the only ones who have access to magic, but the Dingir are also that are stepping through the gate that are kind of like the reincarnates that the eternal made flesh, yeah. you know, instead of following the cycle, they're breaking the cycle. Maybe they have access to a kind of magic as well, because it's only aspects who have access to this, but they're different or something.
Yes, I think this is a good path to go down. But we have to also think about what the other thing that are going on right now, which is, isn't there, I think Rakvar is doing shit with the elves to fight off the abominations, the, what are they called?
Mm-hmm. The aberrations.
Thank you. It's like that's happening.
Right, because initially, you know, they called the second casualty the blinding of the stars, because they were like, oh, the aberrations have eaten a third of the stars in the sky.
Yeah, and it could be that there is a rise in aberrant activity, but the reason why it's so problematic is because they can no longer rely on magic to help them fight.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be it.
Well, and I think, like, this is also a thing, I think that this is a thing to think about, too, is it's important to remember that we look at this from outside, like as a historian, yes. outside of the scope of the people who are living through that time. This would be the apocalypse for them. Like, it is the unleashing of these aberrations. There are stars that were in the sky that are no longer there. And regardless of your knowledge of like cosmography or like, you know, physics, that's bad. That's a bad sign, whether you're an astrologer or an astronomer. That should not be happening. And so like there's a lot of signs here where it's like, this could be the end of the world. And I definitely think it could be fun to draw on those vibes. You know, definitely Mistborn is an end of the world narrative.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's apocalyptic, even if it doesn't appear so always, or at least maybe not at the very beginning. Things seem doomy, but like they're not necessarily like the end. But it would explain Rakvar's behavior, right? He's trying to unite everyone, because it's like, oh, if we have like sort of an authoritarian behemoth, we can use the behemoth to, you know, that is guided by a singular goal to crush any, you know, any evil that is coming. But you also have the Dingir who are doing their own thing. You have and the aspects that are still being born into a world that they like that, you know, is post normal, right? There is no like everything that was conventional is no longer makes sense. And also like because we're right in between the era of high fantasy and war. Right. And I think that that's like a perfect place for the idea of having these like unique gifts.
It's true.
Especially because also if you want to play as one of these like special casters who have these like unique abilities, I think I like the idea of having a different kind of period of time where it's like, the way that I'm currently building the work to eat system is that each Avum has a different mechanic that's not super complicated to grok, but like inherently changes the way that the game is played a little bit so that you get different flavors of Halume, right? And I like the idea of like, if you are picking a, just as we like to zoom in and out when we talk about different things in Halume, having a very narrow period of history where we say like, it might only even last for 150 years, if you want to play characters, you're going to play them in this one period of time is kind of cool because then it means like you're going to bump into a lot of the same characters. You're going to see like the same events from many different perspectives. The more that you play that campaign, It gives like an opportunity to zoom way in on like a specific moment in time, instead of doing kind of the expansive fantasy where it's just like, you know, travel the world and stuff. It's saying like, no, we're looking at like a very narrow slice and exploring significant events from a lot of different like perspectives. So I think there's a lot to be said like that this could be a really fun way of building it out.
Yeah, you got me convinced. I think that's the way we do it.
Okay. Cool. So, all right. So we already are kind of breaking our own rule a little bit in that there is sort of at least two different forms of magic, two different magic systems. However, I think it's maybe because they are consistent with a larger rule, which is this is what I was playing with is what if it is nine flow and fundament?
Okay.
And the relationship between the two magic systems is like that some are having given access because of the nine flow and others are being given access to something a la the fundament. And I think we can do something with that.
Yeah, I think it seems like to me the Dingir that walk through and, you know, disobey the cycle have access, might be able to access the fundament versus the ones born accessing the nine flow.
That's what I'm thinking, especially because it follows the narrative of sort of the fundament being more like this eternal groundwork of reality, the underpinnings, versus the nine flow being sort of this active and dynamic, the dynamic nature of magic versus the static nature of magic. Also, side note, this is something we'll have to explore at some time, but I mentioned this before to you. Maybe it was off, like,
off the books,
you know, during an amble or something. But like the idea that I think that there's the connection between the fundament and the animus, which is something we rarely talk about. But I think that like there is something there. For the listener, if you need just a quick reminder, the animus are the body of the heavens. So like the nine flow passes through the heavens and into reality, right? The animus is the body through which that nine flow passes. So you can think of it like kind of if the nine flow is the river, then the animus is the ground that the river is like gouged into. So, okay, here's the big question. I think this is the one where I'm not too worried about us getting it right the first time. What are the abilities? If we're talking about, maybe we just start with kind of the conventional where we began with this. If you're born special, right? You're, you know, yes. 1/9 of the time, you get lucky, you're born. And it's maybe not 1/9, maybe it's 1/9 of 1/9. We could do sort of like a holy of holies thing there. Whatever. 81. Whatever the ratio is. Actually, you know what? I think it is maybe 1/9 of 1/9. Because if you think about it, if it was 1/9, it's 11% of the population, which is significantly more than the number of people on at other times.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. It depends on how chaotic we want to make it. I think I kind of like 181th more than 1/9, but
I like the 81.
I don't know. What are you feeling?
81.
Okay. Yeah, but like, what are these abilities? Because when we talk about the nine flow, they're typically very abstract, and they're literally called the abstracts, right? We have tried many times before to sort of like ingrain them in more physical or at least like, you know, ratified concepts like colors or materials or even like laws of physics that would be associated with them. This is kind of the difficulty of having an abstract, but I think maybe we just go for it. What do you think is the common theme that we can use to describe what these abilities might be? We could do materials, like interacting with materials or something.
I mean, here's a question for you.
We could do forces of nature. Yeah, what's your question?
Do you want to go more Avatar? Do you want to go more superhero? Do you want to go more X-Men?
I think they should carry a common theme. I'm thinking it's less like, you know, because like one way we could do this is that there's nine themes, right? Like one of them is animalistic and another has to do with like, you know, the four elements, and another has to do with that. And I think that's a little bit too much like omni magic system that we already have, right?
What if there's three?
I mean, we could do three major categories.
Exactly.
Sure.
Three major categories.
You're talking body, heart, head?
Absolutely. Body enhancing, mind enhancing, heart.
And physicality enhancing.
Well, I think body enhancing is the...
Oh, yeah. And also, and emotionally enhancing. Yeah. Like the way that you interact with others or yourself. Yeah. That's a good idea. So it's like, and then that like also is very evocative too, of you can immediately picture like some super buff, superhuman type people who are able to control their physicality, or the people who are like really intelligent or clever, or maybe have like, you know, mental powers. And then you have the people who like are emotionally persuasive, or, you know, can take advantage of others or manipulate, you know?
Yeah, I'm thinking like magical, a kind of magical telepathy, where it's more on the magic side than it is the psionic side.
Is it question? So, okay, this is a fun thing. One of the common ways that people talk about the Enneagram is, right, you have this mental, emotional, or physical component, right? And then, as I've brought up many times before, you have the internalized, externalized, or repression of that component as a person's interaction with it. We could literalize that, where we say, like, there's, like, the internalizing of physical form, which is, like, they have the ability to manipulate their own physical strength or ability of interacting with the world. You have the externalized version of it, which is maybe you can either weaken other people, or maybe it's just that you can interact with the physical environment. Like, maybe that's the way of interpreting it is I can interact with my inner environment, I can interact with the external environment, or I can repress interactions with the environment, like either within myself or other people or something like that. And then same thing with mental, like I can interact with the mental environment, like the external one. I can control my inner mental environment, or I can repress mental power, something like that. And same thing with emotions.
Or could it be, so does everyone have three, or is it just like whenever you get one, when you're born, one of those happens?
You just have one of them. I mean, maybe we could have figures called like, yeah, I mean, okay. So there is a mechanic in Work to Eat called Finding Harmony. Did I explain the post-level leveling thing to you?
And by the way, whenever I hear Work to Eat, I just hear wheat. By the way, so it's the wheat system.
Yeah, no, I know. I do. That's how I think of it too. Wheat, but I figure that's less. Actually, I won't go into all of it, especially because like that's typically more for the amble. But the gist of it is basically, I wanted to build something that works kind of like World of Warcraft or Destiny, where it's like the leveling is half the fun, and the other half of the fun is peeking and doing like the fine tuning stuff. And how often do people actually get to level 20
ever
as a D&D character? Like, I've run a game for like six years or something like that, and like those characters are level 16 or 17, or maybe 18. And so I was like, well, you know, just let them get their capstones. And then you kind of do some fine tuning stuff. But basically the way that it works is like you unlock, it's called finding your like finding harmony. And then it is like after you reach a certain level or like once significant events, you basically your character finds harmony and it allows them to kind of change the way that they level and they can kind of cherry pick abilities from other people's temperaments and stuff like that. And I'm like, we could have sort of those avatar-like characters or the Mistborn, you know, where like they have access to all three of something. And I think maybe there's a legendary figure that has access to all nine. That's like a prophesized one, but that one may or may not even exist.
Jesus.
That's more, I think, like the hero of the ages over, you know, over a specific particular Mistborn.
Yes.
And that person who has like access to all three might be called like a, I don't know, a something. But okay, so question, how, because here's the thing, we could do it where it's just like, you know, oh, like I can just increase in physical strength or something. But the thing I like about Mistborn is that it's the theme of having the medals means that you can have more variety with the abilities, but they are still a consistency, right? They still have an underlying theme. And so it's like, I like the idea of this internalized, externalized, repressed abilities, but I don't know if I would just want it to be like, this person can increase their own physical strength, and this other person can repress other people's physical strength, because that's kind of just like the same ability, but on two different sides of it.
I mean, what is steel pushing
not,
and
it's
iron
not.
Push and mind pulling?
Right, exactly. But like in that situation, the steel pushing and iron pushing, because Brandon Sanderson is very good at doing visual writing, he's able to figure out how one of those can kind of, you can still be really good at fighting, even if only you only have half of those two, mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I'm just, I don't want it to just be about controlling somebody else's emotions, or I control my own emotions, you know, controlling somebody else's mentality or accessing it, or controlling my own. I don't know. Or just like there's ways of interpreting that is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. Like, you could say that telepathy is the like the external stuff, but maybe it's just psionic powers in general. So like you are born with psionic powers, and we can put a natural limit on what those can do. But like, if you're psionic, you have sort of that externalized, you know, cognitive energy. But like, what would be the internalized cognitive energies?
I mean,
maybe do you have like perfect memory or something?
Or you can, I could see like, so yeah, so it's an interesting thing where maybe you can like, trying to think, interior intellect. Power, what would that be?
It's like control over your own cognitive state.
This is weird.
Maybe you can become good at anything or something. I don't know. Yeah,
yeah, you could
up?
Like switch around. You had like a power to switch around skills or something like that. Or
it's like that scene in Westworld where what's her name is like looking at her stats layout for her
yeah.
You know, her as a host, and she just like changes the bars at will. I mean, it could be kind of something like that.
I was thinking,
what were you
something
gonna say?
Like that, or we could do some weird like you can like see your mind, you know, like in the future or something like this. Like, you have access to what your mind is like in different times or something. And then you can, like, use that, call on that for, your, you know, a certain number of times through concentration to get, like, hints or...
Okay. This is a time of cataclysm, mm-hmm. right? maybe one of the things that happens, and I don't know exactly how this ties in, but I think it has something to do with what you've got going on. Maybe people don't dream anymore.
Okay.
People lose access to Somnus. And this is maybe one of the things that, I mean, imagine how bad that would be for the elves, right? Rakvar can probably use this, be like, hey, we don't even have the Avareel anymore. We don't have access to it. Our trance is no longer there. Where did it go? We didn't feel it die or disappear. It's just gone as if it never was or something like that. And I think that there's maybe something related to that with the way that these people's mental faculties are working. I really like the idea of being able to kind of see future versions of your, there's like that one metal in Mistborn that can kind of do sort of like future prediction.
You can
stuff.
Perceive possibilities or something like that.
Yeah. Yes. Also, maybe it's that there is this inner space that you can traverse. And it's almost like, you know, like kind of doing something with the Mind Palace thing, but almost like you can store stuff there and use it as maybe almost like a hammer space. Do you know what hammer space is? Do you know what that means?
No.
Okay, hammer space is something that comes from cartoons. It's whenever like a Wile E. Coyote or whatever pulls a giant mallet out from behind them. And it's like, where was that supposed to be? You know, or like when Link or another like, you know, protagonist in some video game just like pulls stuff out of nowhere. It's like, well, you couldn't have been holding that on you. There was no space for that. It's coming out of hammer space. Maybe they have a kind of hammer space where they can like store corporeal things as information and then like retrieve them later or something.
Or
I think
here's something.
Loki kind of has access to hammer space.
Yes. Also, you know, wrist pocket, that spell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking there's also the possibility of, so this is a reach from the fairy tale anime, is there's a kind of magic called like data magic or archive. I think it's archive magic where it's like you have a computer and you can like send information to people like through messages like telepathy or like send them maps. Like you upload maps to people's heads and they know exactly where to go.
Okay. I think that that's more associated with the externalized magic, but I really like that idea. Also, there's for sure the, I like both of those. So, okay, really quick, I was going to say, what do you think the repressed cognitive functions? So first of all, I think the repression of all three are very interesting to me. The idea of like repressing these energies and like shutting them down for yourself or for others is it's that you don't have access to doing the things in either space, but you have the ability to shut down and nullify. Like maybe you can cause people to go unconscious. Maybe you can do, I don't know. I feel like there's more than that though. It's the idea of like,
do you know the spell Feeble Mind?
Yeah. Stuff like that.
So yeah, something,
but also kind of a counter spell type thing too, or an anti magic, right?
You could maybe just throw a concentration like that where you can like break someone's concentration by but then again spells don't work anymore. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, or at least not that kind of magic. I mean, this is still technically magical abilities, so like I think it's still running off of the nine flow when it happens.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily these kinds of things stuff. So we're repressing intellect. You can maybe repress people's ability to speak.
Right, but it's like, I guess what I'm saying is it's like it's a magically enhanced intellect or it's a magically triggered telepathy.
Yes.
Like, you know how you have psionic powers that are separate from magic? Yeah. I guess maybe that's a bit of a misnomer in this situation. I'm thinking more of like a psionic powers that are when a person's doing like sending as a spell or that kind
of thing. Yeah, it's magical
it's
telepathy.
Using the nine flow to do that.
They're doing similar things, but in different ways.
Yeah.
Right. End results is the same. The means are different.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I guess I'll say this. I don't know
that can repress to be able to use it without having another blessed person. If you follow me.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I want it to be, it's not just something where it only makes sense and is cool and good and interesting when they're shutting somebody else down, because then that makes their thing very conditional and it's not just like universally good. I mean, maybe it's just that they can repress mental energies in general, you know, not just magical ones, but like could also what would be the value of repressing your own mental energies? you get all Spock-like, you know? You don't give in to fear or something like that, I guess?
Well, I don't really think that's intellect. It's more heart. Fear is heart, surely.
Well, technically, I mean, at least as according to the Enneagram, it is actually a mental thing, but...
I think that's wrong.
There's reason to explain
metaphysically
that.
Metaphysically
speaking. It's a...
Look, this is the shit
has,
I do
it
in
has, it basically has to do with anxieties and insecurities.
Okay.
So, like, knowledge brings about fear because knowledge brings awareness of when things are bad or good, whereas awareness of social situations brings about shame because you wouldn't have shame unless you understood society.
Yeah, but so there's
or
a two...
Like, human interactions.
There's a two kind of fold understanding of what fear is. Fear... as an intellectual concept, is the anticipation of something that is bad.
Mm-hmm. Right?
The anticipation of some future bad. You're afraid
right.
someone might hurt you. You're afraid the snake might bite you. That's why you fear the snake. But fear is also an emotion that can be overpowering to
sure.
reason.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I mean, I definitely think like the Enneagram is an imperfect yeah. thing, or at least it's coming from like, it's rooted in the idea that there is a difference between the heart and the head. When in truth, like, both of those are cognitive functions, you know? Like, and the way that they... Like, it's all coming out of the brain.
Yes. But, there's a lot of weird stuff with, like, what is of the intellect and what is of the emotion, emotive part.
Well, I think it's a little of both. Like, I think that it's... I mean, if anything, it's an emotional reaction to mental information. Like, your brain is making sense of a picture... And then your emotions react to it to say, I'm afraid of this because this would be a danger to me or something that is.
Yeah, but oftentimes it's irrational, right? Oftentimes your fear is irrational and you
sure.
shouldn't fear
yeah.
things rationally speaking. And so it's not based in reason. It's based mm-hmm. in this other thing, which is still like
well,
a brain
it's not
thing.
Necessarily. I don't know how you're defining reason. You probably are right on that. But what I'll say is it might be. Oftentimes, irrational fears are based on things that have been burned into us because of core belief systems from like earlier in our development. Like maybe I'm afraid of the water because I, you know, almost drowned as a child and I won't go back into it. And even though I'd be a perfectly good swimmer now, like the rational part of the irrationality is that like my brain got burned into me saying like, hey, water's dangerous because you almost died. And therefore, like, I'm afraid of the water, even though I have no reason to be, because I'd be a perfectly good swimmer. But also, you know, that the early rationalities, I guess that's not really rational. That's the definition of irrationality.
Yeah, but there's also, so basically what you're getting at is that a reason can train emotions. And so it can order them about.
Okay.
In a limited capacity. It's more powerful over long periods of time. And mm-hmm. so basically, if you've gone through your life being like, water is fucking scary as hell, you've trained yourself to believe that. And so when you see water, you're afraid.
Right. Okay.
And you can train yourself out of that.
Gotcha.
It requires a lot of work. It's very
right.
difficult.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing about us, like, as humans, needing to accept. And this is like the whole thing about the Enneagram. And then we
yes.
should just get back to the world building. But like, all of this is relevant, though, because all of this is built into the core of the way the world building works. But like the whole point of the Enneagram in a lot of ways is about acknowledging like the way that core belief structures get built. And then like that core beliefs become dogma as we grow up because our circumstances change and our faculties change. And so core beliefs that are based on faculties and circumstances that are no longer true or relevant no longer serve us and are oftentimes actively work against our betterment as you know, humans or individuals that are seeking to survive. And so like the core belief that you have that's like, this is the only way that I will survive, then becomes the thing that's actually poisoning your existence and preventing you from surviving. And then it becomes a matter of like learning to see the world from outside of that core belief and potentially rewriting and having a new core belief or series of beliefs.
Yes. Okay.
So anyways, yeah, good stuff.
So we were talking about repressing intellect is what we were at. And mm-hmm. you know, put forward fear, and I'm like, well, maybe not. It could just be like you can make people dumber. So it's like easier to manipulate them
yeah.
or... But, you know, in a different way...
I think we put a pin in the
repression
for now.
Okay.
I think we put a pin in the repression for now because I think that there is something really cool about that that we are definitely not finding talking about it this way. I think I get the feeling it's the kind of thing we might stumble onto later, okay, of like what makes this a really interesting sort of, you know, a person could be born with this and be like, well, I'm useless, like that alloy of law madam, but like, actually, hey, no, it could actually be really, really great, yes, and powerful in this one rare, yes, circumstance. Also, really quick, do you remember what it was that ended up being useful, yes, for at the end?
So basically, her power was that...
spoilers, yes, for the alloy of law.
So her power was that she could burn, like, you know, some alloy, and it made it to where it seemed like not a lot of time was passing, but, like, everything else was fast-forwarded.
For her, but everything else anyone was near fast-forwarding around her. Yes. And
so
anyone
she
near
like
her,
went
right,
out and like, yep, talked to someone who they were trying to get like arrested or something like this, and she was burning it while she was talking to them, so they could all get set up and ready to, like, you know, put their guns on him.
That's right. Yeah, they did like a whole, yep, sting operation around him, and she was the distraction to give them enough time to do it because they weren't aware that time was passing quickly for them. That's just like some fun shit. Like, that's good, Brandon Sanderson, yep, man.
Branderson.
That's some good creative writing.
A very, very creative man.
You distract him and you give him enough time to like basically rebuild an, yes, entire room around them, and they don't know it's happening. Yep. Great. Good stuff. Also could help you like survive in a place that's unsurvivable for a much longer period, yep, of time. You know, like if you have a chamber that only has 3 minutes of oxygen and like rescue is 4 days away, that would be a situation, you know, anytime you need time to pass very quickly. But so anyways, yeah, I think that's what I guess I'm trying to get at with these like repression ones. I think that we'll come back around to figuring out what makes them cool. We could kind of talk about the others. We're getting a little bit on an hour in the hour for this episode, but
long in the tooth.
A little long in the tooth. We could talk about more of them. I think there's actually a couple more things about this era of time that I think I would almost like be like, man, this is almost season worthy. Like, I'd almost explore a whole season of this, but I don't think it'd be a full season. I think maybe at least several episodes, though. We could do like a mini series,
yeah,
on
for
it
for sure, like Chernobyl.
Maybe that's what we do after the next season. Maybe after season four we do a mini series on this period of history or something. I don't remember enough about the Blinding of the Stars, the Section Casualty, the arrival of the Dingir, and like the Strife Spire, though, to remember exactly what. Isn't this also when? I know that this is when the spans get like built around, like elongated around the spires, right? Before then, mortals are guarding the spires.
Yes.
But after that time, or it's that mortals are still technically guarding them afterwards, but like after that time when the Strife Spire gets corrupted and is visibly so to like the gods, where they're like, oh shit, this is fucked. That's when they like basically make it so unless you're essentially chosen by the gods, you can't even visit the spire.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's
because I know that what's his name happened during Avum Tertius, your character
Ashwin,
the child of five, Ashwin. Yeah, Ashwin happened during the Avum Tertius when the spire was still somewhere you could, yes, just visit as like a location in the world. Whereas like afterwards, it's like, yes, they're still technically being guarded by mortals, but it's more sort of like the immortal guidance of of a chosen people who are not allowed to leave sort of like a green valley or something and are stand to protect like a Shangri-La kind of thing. You know, for generation after generation, and it's like that's their whole vocation, that's their whole life is to
yeah,
do this.
And technically speaking, the nine, which you know obviously became the seven, their goal, mm-hmm, was to protect Spiral and still is, but you know they've got they delegate,
mm-hmm,
as any good.
So in other words, there's a whole lot of precedent information that's going on here that I think would be important to kind of yes, explore and impart. And you know what, each of those nine, every single person is born with whatever that ability is that's related to that spire.
Really? Okay.
And hell, dude, I mean, well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, might as well do that. Like, of those who are born in that city or whatever, there's like almost like a chosen people vibe. I don't think it's literally just anybody, like, you just pass through and you have a child around that spire, yeah, and then yeah, they're born with that ability. I think it's more like they're chosen by the gods, like this, you know, one clan of people who have, you know, who have been protecting and guarding it, like have been blessed by their god. Or maybe, you know, they lose access with their gods for this short period of time or something. And like, because magic is all wild and stuff, and you don't have access to clerical magic either. But there's like this remnant gift that they're like, oh, you know, the gods have been gifted this to us. Although maybe that kind of breaks the rule of it only being aspects. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, quick question. Well, maybe should we just do lore bits? I think it might be lore bits time.
All right.
Lore bit Taylor. I have a little lore bit that I think, I don't know what the answer to this is, but I'm very curious to be like, okay, so we've talked about the aspects that are born naturally into the world, these like ninth of a ninth, who have these gifts. Is it just two things? One, is it just that they're the ones who are born in, or is it that after some time, those who were wizards, you know, and lose access to their magic, there are those who never had magic in their whole lives and suddenly discover, oh, wait, I have this like weird, unique ability. And they discover it in the coming months or years after this like event occurs. And maybe that's also true. Maybe there's some wizards who are like, well, I lost access to this one magic, but I also gained access to this other kind of thing. But it's very specific, you know.
It would break the rule of the aspects.
Yeah, it would. Or I mean, or really, what it might be is it's people discovering that they're aspects that didn't know that their aspects. I mean, that could be part of it too.
Discovering,
which. Yeah, yes. I mean, it's the whole retro, like the retcon thing that you can do with D&D of like, I'm going to take a level in like sorcery. It's like, oh, and then all of a sudden you discover, hey, I've always had access to magic, but I just didn't know it until I reached level 7, I guess. Which, I don't know, I think that's actually can be kind of fun, absolutely, narratively. But okay, so the actual lore bit that I had when I was like kind of contemplating that other little piece was, I wonder what the Dingir are then. Like, what does having access to the fundament mean? Do you have access to, maybe you have access to like all nine, but in a more reduced way or something? Because the whole thing about the Dingir is that they're born again over and over, and that might mean that they have access to different temperaments each time.
I like that. I think that's cool.
And if they have access to like kind of their eternal memories, then they're able to do that. But maybe it has a reduced effect or something. And not just, I don't just mean a reduced effect, but I mean literally like it doesn't behave the same way. Something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
That's my lore bit, though. It's more of a question than an answer. You got anything?
I'm trying to marinate on what you said.
Hmm.
I don't think I do. I think I'm tapped.
We could definitely, I mean, with whatever it is with the fundament, we could kind of play off of the difference in the nature of the fundament in the nine flow. I think that might be part of it too. Hey, by the way, I didn't even realize this. This is okay. So here's your lore bit. Don't worry, I got you covered. Nice. Here's second lore bit. Unintentionally, we even have an Air Nation situation going on.
Are you talking about the Spire?
The Strife Spire. Yeah, because if there's people, which those are like the body repression peoples. So like there would be a dwindling number of them, an inherent power imbalance between all of the nine, because like when this event occurs, I think maybe some people are born with it or something, but there's like a corruption there. I don't know. Maybe I don't really like the whole, I'm not that into the whole Sidar, Sidin, like yeah. Sidin is corrupted thing. I think it just is kind of lame, and also like just shows its age in terms of people go crazy. It's just like, I don't know. It's just not very interesting to me. But, and also because it never really does anything in that story, like spoilers for towards the end of the Wheel of Time, but they literally just cleanse the male half of the source. And it's just like, okay, so all of this thing that you've been building up for literally decades as you're writing these books is just like, ah, I don't really want him to go crazy. That's like kind of a problem. I just wanted to hang it more as like a sort of Damocles, you know?
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, you know, maybe I am crazy, maybe I'm not. And people are like, he's definitely crazy. Look at the things he did. And he's like, well, maybe I am. Yeah, I am crazy. Well, look at me. I'm fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. I'll claim the goddamn half of the source. I'll do it.
And for literally for books and books, he's just like, Rand is just like, oh, man, I might be crazy. Am I crazy? I might be crazy. I'm hearing his voice. Am I crazy? But it's never like a, yes, you are crazy. You're doing crazy shit. And, oh, damn, like, everything's been doomed. Because the moment that if that ever actually happened, then, yeah, the whole, like, book is over. The whole series is over. So it's just like, I don't know. Not great tension there. But, yes, I do think that something about the Strife Spire, I don't think it's just that they're inherently corrupted and it's just like, oh, they're doomed to go mad or something like that. I think it might just be more like some of them have been infected with strife. Or something like that.
They might just be more violent the more they use it or something like this.
Yeah, something like that. Or instead of repressing, they inflame physical power or something like that. And that might be, maybe that's the goal of the aberrations or something like that, is to basically make these inverted versions. I mean, that's their whole thing. They unmake, right? So like these inverted versions, these antimatter equivalents to the powers of like internalized and externalized and stuff, like turn them all on their heads, anti-internalization, anti-externalization. And you end up with like just turning all of the spires inside out. That could be pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can paint a kind of inversion of every...
As like a danger. You know, it's like it's threatening all the nations or something like that. And all the nations get brought together under like the Eldian Imperio, you know, sort of like one last, hurrah, you know, big job. Rakvar brings everything together. And it like after that stuff, maybe they like, you know, however that climactic, you know, apocalypse ends, everything is permanently shattered, perfectly setting everything up for Avum Cordis is like the damage has been done. Like, yes, you prevented the apocalypse or whatever by using everyone in that circumstance, and by like uniting everybody, it was like you had to break all bonds to tie one singular new one, and now that bond is no longer relevant, everything is left in shards and debris. Break the existing world to make a new one.
It's just like Rand.
But the world you made is now just shattered. Yep, yeah, I know. Getting Jesus a lot Christ, of timelines from this. Guy who's only read Wheel of Time books. Getting a lot of Wheel of Time vibes from this one.
Maybe with a dash of Branderson.
Yeah, some Branderson, some Avatar Last Airbender. There's a lot of shit going on in this one period of time. All right, well, I think that's good for us, yeah?
Frank, you have the power. I don't.
All right. Well, thanks for letting us be your escape. If you forgot your worries and you want to make others forgetful, we're on every podcasting service known to humankind. So don't be greedy. Share us with your friends.
Did we discuss something that was confusing as hell? Of course we did. We talked about the Wheel of Time. But chances are there is some context in the podcast description. So go there and read about, there'll be a link to Frank's fanfic about the Wheel of Time. And you can also explore the subreddit or reach us at the Lore Keepers on Twitter or email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com for questions or things you'd like to hear in future episodes.
I remember being very crushed when the whole Egwene Rand thing ended all of a sudden. It felt like out of nowhere. Like retrospectively, like I can look back and be like, I get it. I get what he's doing. And it seemed like there was even some broadcasting of that from the beginning, maybe. But like the first two or even three books are just like, they're in love. They're going to be together. You know, it's the retelling of the story from the beginning of time or whatever with Ilyena and whatever the dragon's name is, you know.
Yeah, it was the last
Pandrag Tenreal or whatever. Yeah. And then like we get to this one, it's like actually no, everybody's just super poly and has harems and, you know, everybody's got at least two wives or three husbands or six butts and who knows whatever. Doesn't everyone's nothing fucking matters. Everyone. We're just completely rewriting all of it. Everyone's fucking everyone. Yeah. Like, and like Min. Bless her heart. Min's one of my favorite characters. Her affection for Ran feels like it comes out of literally fucking nowhere. Maybe I'm super wrong on that, but I like started the books at the beginning of this year and like started listening to them again. And I definitely don't remember like almost any evidence of Min being into Rand at all. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, met him once, you know, talked with him for about 20 minutes. I'm new, it gives, you know, true
it
love.
It gives me a lot of Aragorn, Eowyn vibes. Where, like, Eowyn's in love with what she thinks Aragorn represents, and Aragorn's like, you don't actually sure. fucking love me, you yeah. just met me, you don't even know that I'm, like, fucking 80 years old.
Yeah, except that story is a lot better. Yeah, but you know me, you know, hey, I started it, so I have to finish it. Yeah,
fucking,
thus is my curse.
You drew that sword, so you gotta stick it in the ground, you gotta throw yourself on it. God damn it.
Yep. Yep. Anyways, All Bow Before the Musical Might of Joshua TGE Silkinghammer, Forager of the Land of Heroes, Lorekeeper's Theme, and of course, thanks to Sam Wade for the album art and my fucking tattoo. Yep. It's not my fucking tattoo. It's not like the tattoo I have specifically for fucking, but it's like my tattoo that I have. That's my fucking tattoo.
As it were.
You get what I'm saying. Anyways, there's probably a picture on the Twitter at this point. I literally haven't taken a picture, but I know that I showed off to Carter and Martha in the previous episode, so I definitely should have something uploaded by now to Twitter. You can check out her stuff at By Sam Wade, and she's also, I think, on Twitter at By Sam Wade too. I recently followed her. So you can check her out there too.
So until next time, don't forget there are always more Wheel of Time fanfics to write.
Oh my god, more Sidon infused madmen to go mad.
To get,
I guess.
Like,
I don't know.
Scrubbed claims.
Stupid. Like yeah. Just like be like, oh, it's all good. Oh, this is all better. Because yeah, you really wrote yourself into a corner there, huh? Fucking Robert
get
Jordan.
You
You're
dead
like,
asshole.
What if we just had 1,000 men who all had access to this insano power? Yeah, that's gonna work out great. All right. All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week. Bye. Instead of 15 minutes. What if it was 15 minutes and then that was just 4 minutes of silence? Just waiting.
That would be a foolish choice of time clapping.
Yeah. How you doing, bud?
I am doing well. I am, I've got a lot to do today, but, you know, that feels like every Sunday.
Yeah, you got a busy one? A lot of school stuff? Or?
Yeah, I was expecting to do some stuff yesterday, but I went to go, you know, so I assume in Michigan, like, you have, or maybe your car is still living in Minnesota, you have registration stickers you put on every year, like it says.
Yeah,
yeah. Like I think this.
Yeah,
is
yeah. States. No, we got the car back. Oh, that's funny, man. I guess I didn't realize you haven't known this like explicitly, but yeah, no, we got the car when I got hired. It's beep.
Yeah, I mean, I know you got the car, but I don't know that you registered it in Michigan.
Oh yeah, yes, we did. I registered it. I'm technically a citizen of. Like, I'm a registered citizen of Michigan now instead of Minnesota. Because in order to vote here in 2020, I needed to be, so.
Yeah, I just, my car still lives in Florida. Even though, you know, obviously it's here.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and I still technically am a citizen of Florida, and I'll vote there because it's just like. I do live there for some part of the year when I return to my parents and, you know, spend time with them. So technically speaking, it's not, like, illegal for me to not be a citizen, but.
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah. It's right in the line of legality, whether it's like, you know, how many months do I spend out of the year in Florida? You know how it goes.
Mm-hmm. But you're saying, did you get your stickers or something?
Yeah, I got my stickers in the mail. So like, yeah, I put them on my car. And as I was doing that, two of my professors walked by and were like, oh, hey, Carter, how's it going? And then I chatted with them. And then like they're like, oh, you know, have a good one. And I'm like, okay. And so then I got in my car to go to the liquor store to buy some gin and some Pimm's and some cider. And I wanted a bit of Guinness. So I got some of that too.
Ooh.
I love Guinness.
Have we talked about Pimm's before?
I don't know if
has this been a conversation we've had. Maybe. Because Rachel introduced me to Pimm's.
Pimm's is great.
Because she had it when she was in
the UK.
Not London. I mean, she was in London, but she was also more. She was, I think, in Oxford, I think, or Cambridge or something. I don't remember. Somewhere sure. Fancy, very hoity-toity. Because it was like a tradition that like you'd have like Pimm's is a very like summer collegiate drink, and you'd mix it with like tea or other stuff. What did they mix it with?
It's really good with like ginger ale.
Lemonade? Ginger ale. I think it was maybe ginger ale. I don't know. I'm almost expecting Rachel to just come bursting through the door and
ginger ale, lemon juice, and and Pimm's is
very good. Something like that. But it was and a ton of fruit, like just like so much sliced fruit. Yep. And it's such a great summer drink.
It is. It absolutely.
Seems a little late in the year to be getting some Pimm's, but
I mean, we just
know, hey, you know,
I bet we just ran out. So.
Ah, gotcha.
Yep. Plus, it's, you know, it does not get cold here for another few months. So.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Hey, I'm playing Control right now.
Oh, great game. I love that game.
It's a fantastic game. And dude, playing it on a 3070 with all the ray tracing and the DLSS beautiful. And everything at 4K. It's like it's the most graphically impressive game I've ever played. It's like, oh, so that's why you buy a expensive graphics card that's like current gen or next gen. Like it's crazy. But like the game, even without all of that stuff, like the game is very cool. Yes. It's like so much the vibes of a lot of stuff that I've only ever experienced, like, adjacently. Like, I've never watched The X-Files. And, like, the closest I've gotten is probably something like Warehouse 13, where I watch that. And it's like, oh, this is cool. You know, or Gravity Falls, which is, like, you know, the Cartoon Network version of that.
I've seen Gravity Falls. I've seen some of The X-Files, not all of it by any means.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Warehouse 13.
But, like, yeah. I mean, like, and it's very good though, and I love like the conceit of it is, I mean, it has so much to do with consensus theory. Like everything is about like the power of human thought, and that like our belief in things makes them real, which is ironically like the whole thing that we talked about last episode. But you know, honestly, it's mostly I just counted as a win because I was trying to make Torment Tides of Numenera work. I think you might remember like earlier in the year I was like, oh, you know, I have this backlog of games. I'm actually going to start trying to attack it and just like get through all these games and stuff. After I think it was Celeste was the last one that I actually beat, which is mind-boggling because I think that was maybe April or something. And I moved on to Torment Tides of Numenera, and I felt like I was just making myself play the game, which sucks because I think that's kind of where I ended up with Pillars of Eternity as well. Although Pillars of Eternity was a lot easier to grok because it's just a fantasy world.
Yeah.
Whereas Torment Tides of Numenera is just like nothing is related to anything else. Like you can't just pick up on the logic of a circumstance because every idea is a new idea.
Yeah.
Which is cool if you're trying to do a grab bag of ideas, which was like my whole point was like I was like, oh, I can farm this for, you know, stuff to use in Halome, but it doesn't make for a fun video game experience because the entire time you're left like staring at a wall of text and you're like, oh wait, okay, so this operates on completely different rules than literally anything else in this room. Like in the room that I'm in, nothing else tracks the way that this does. So like just on a narrative level,
yeah,
so it's just hard to play. So I was like, oh, maybe I'm broken. Maybe I don't like video games anymore. No. No, I like video games. I've been having a lot of fun with Control.
Good.
Also, Rachel and I have been playing Yoku's Island Express, and I got her just completely hooked on it.
What the fuck is that game?
Yeah, dude. I've never heard of this. It's a Metroidvania pinball game. It's an adorable game where like you are this little dung beetle named Yoku who shows up to be the new postal service on this island.
Okay.
And yeah, there's a, it's a very cute game. It's got like the current, the postmaster was the post pterodactyl. And just like, I don't know, just like a cute pterodactyl who of course delivers a post, but like Yoku's this dung beetle and has like a little, it's basically like some sort of golf ball or egg or something that they're rolling around. And they get hired to be the new post office person. They get washed ashore. And then everything is like, there's flippers and bumpers all over the island. And so you're just like moving from table to table by using the bumpers and stuff. And it has like a very like non-linear Metroidvania feel to it, where like you are getting abilities and things that allow you to interact with the world in new ways. Super, super fun and super cute. Like one of the first things that you get is a party horn, you know, like the things you blow at like at New Year's to like, you know, it's like tweet, you know, and like unrolls.
It's, oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And you like, and like you interact with, that's your A button move. Like you're interacting with the environment by using that to like wake up sleeping animals, okay, or to like break crystals. It's very silly. But yeah, she loves it and it's super fun and she's been playing a bunch of it. We've been playing a bunch of it together. That and Phoenix Wright. So I don't know. Games are alive and kicking for me. I just didn't realize it.
All right. Yeah. I mean, that's sure.
Not where you were going, though. I realized I just kind of went off on a whole tangent, huh? We were talking about you're bringing up the tabs and just that you have a lot of stuff going on today, and I was like, oh, yes. Video games.
Yes, I do. Just so the where I was going with the story was like, I see these two professors, right? And then I go and get this alcohol from the liquor store.
The Pimm's, right?
Pimm's gin, cider, and of course Guinness.
You're gonna mix that all together?
Yeah. I got the gin because I want to make some gin cocktails. Because I have a whole bottle of Saint-Germain that I've not touched. And so I just want to make, you know, like a gimlet, if you will.
Gimlets are great.
Yeah.
Do you do blended ice for your gimlet?
I mean, I can. I haven't.
If you have a blender, you should try it. Okay. It's so good. Like, because you get that kind of like frothy smoothie texture to it.
Okay.
Makes it like highly tropical. And it's like in the enjoyment, you know, kind of like you're like spooning it out into the glass. It's really good.
Yeah, I'm just gonna do it with gin, lime juice, and Saint-Germain. See how that goes.
Nice. Saint-Germain is really good. I don't know. We've had the same small guy of just like, I think it's maybe like 375 milliliters or something. We've had the same one for like 10 months or something.
Really. I have, yeah. Like,
I mean, we just have also so many other things as well, so we just don't, we go through, okay, it at a very slow rate.
I have, but, like, yeah. 1.5 liters. I have a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of drinks don't call for a lot of Saint-Germain either. That's, yeah. I think, part of it. Is elderflowers are pretty strong. It's, like, a pretty potent flavor. Yes. So
it'll last, yeah, me a while, but
it's good, though.
So, yeah, I'm excited to try a few recipes of those out, though I need to buy a lot of Prosecco, really, in order to make use of it, because almost all of it is, like, summery, spritzy.
Sure. Cocktails. Yeah, Prosecco is great for that.
So I return from my shopping, and I'm like, you know what? I spoke to those...
And that was this morning?
No, that was yesterday. So, okay. This is explaining why I have so much to do this morning. So, I...
Okay.
So, I go... I return and I'm like, you know what? I was speaking to those professors and they were just out on a walk and I didn't realize they lived so close. So maybe I can go see if I can find their street. And so I, like, you know, I walk outside and I go looking for their street and I see them just continuing walking. I've gone to the liquor store, come back and they're still walking. Back
and they're still just going on a walk.
Yeah, and so I flag him down. I'm like, hey, you know, I was wondering where you live, since you said you're so close to me, because now they know where I live. So I'm like, you know, show me where you live. So I walk with them back to their houses, and they show me, and it's like an 8-minute walk, so it's not too bad.
Sure,
but it was longer than I expected. And so then, you know, one of them's like, oh, this is my house. You know, see you guys later. Nice to see you. And I'm like, yeah, of course. And then I walk with the other one to his house, and he's like, you want to come in? You know, like have a cup of tea. I'm like, sure, yeah. And I'm actually in. So he and his wife are both professors of the philosophy department. And his wife, I'm in a class with his wife at the moment, contemporary mm-hmm. political philosophy. And so I walk in and he's like, oh, Carter's here. And then she's like on the couch, like grading something. And she's like, oh, hey, Carter. And I'm like, hey. And it's like, she's like literally like recording herself, give feedback for students. So, you know, she's out of commission. And so like I go, you know, we're chatting, I'm chatting with the male professor, and he's like telling me about the deck work he's doing. He takes me out to his back deck, which is 30 feet off the ground. And he's like, yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Holy shit. That's like 2.5 stories.
So basically his house is
three
like
stories.
His house looks like it's a ground level, but the back is like it's a hill.
So, it just immediately drops off.
Yeah. It just like goes down. And so, like, he has two basement units that he rents out.
Like, stories that are, like, below ground?
No. So, it's only...
That both
it's only,
have, like, a face out on
it's
the
one,
exterior?
Yeah, it's, like, one story basement kind of thing. But it has... He split it into two units, and he's renting those out.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so, he takes me out to the back door, which, you know, there's no change in elevation. You just walk into the house and then you keep walking and then you get to the back door, you open it and you look out on the back, you know, past the deck, and it's like 30 feet down. Like there is a tree where it like starts branching out of the crown right next to you. And you're like, what the fuck? And so there's no railings.
Man, that's almost like, wait, shit. Yeah, because he's still building it?
He's rebuilding it because it was like slanted or something. And so he's redoing it, and he's got really beautiful like hardwood boards he's putting down, and he's like describing to me like at one of the like railing posts how he's gonna like weld this certain part on it because they're like metal posts and he needs to make it taller.
Oh god. Yeah.
And like I'm just like looking down 30 feet while his cat is like meowing at me, and I'm like, oh cool. And he's like, I think the water's probably ready, so we go back inside. And he's like, you want to sit out on, you know, the Not the 30-foot deck, but the porch at the front. I'm like, yeah, sure. Uh-huh. And so, like, we walk.
So you go to the front of the house, and you're just on a normal block now.
Yeah. But, like, as we're walking there, he looks to the side, like, through, another doorway. And he, like, sees something, and he's like, 1 second. So then I take a step forward, and I look where he's looking, and it's just, like, cat shit on a rug. And so then he, like, grabs his cat by the scruff of the neck and, like, picks him up, and he's like, ah! And then he like mm-hmm. shows him the shit, and he's like, no, like bad cat, you know, just displaying his cat. And but he's like shouting uh-huh. this. And then his wife is like, what the fuck? Like, I'm trying to record here and you're just shouting in the back.
I forgot that the wife is recording.
Yeah.
Commentary.
And so then she's like, I got to fucking restart now. And then they get into a little like spat, and I'm like, yeah. I'm like looking out a window, like sipping my tea.
How old are these professors?
They're like probably late 30s or mid to late 30s.
Okay, so they're like young professors. Yeah, young professors. This is not just like an old couple. No. Just like this is fucking funny. Yeah. Holy shit!
And then like I look and like there's another cat just like sleeping on a chair, and I'm like, oh, is it? And he's like, I don't think that was effective. Like referring to like him shouting at his cat. Because he's like, sometimes it's effective. I don't think it was effective this time. And I'm like, I didn't know you had two cats. Because I had known Oliver because Oliver likes to shout. And there was a time in COVID where I had a class with him. And Oliver would just shout into his mic constantly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Oliver, you're saying, is the cat, professor.
Not the professor.
I had a professor just like during COVID times just be yelling into his mic constantly.
No, shouting at his cat, no.
Just other people would be trying to talk and just go,
And so I point out this other cat, and he's like, oh, that's Eliza. She's better than Oliver. She doesn't shit on the rug. And so I'm like, okay. And she's just like nonchalantly sleeping on this chair. And so we go out to the porch, and we don't let Oliver out because, you know, he's being punished. And he's just now at this point we're chatting about like an event that happened on Friday, because there was a speaker that came for philosophy, and mm-hmm. you know, we had a reception and I went to a dinner and all this stuff. And so he's talking about what he thought about the speaker's talk, and in the background you can just hear Oliver shouting through the door, meowing as loudly as possible.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And so then I sit there and I stay there for like an hour and we're just chatting, and then I'm like, okay, you know, I should probably get home. And he's like, yeah, you know. And I was like, you know, thanks for the hospitality, all that stuff. And then I walk home. And so I expected to get a lot of stuff done, but I didn't, because in part because
of that. Yeah, because right, that wow, dude, are you sure that wasn't like, I feel like that's like a either a biopic or a novel that somebody's writing about being a like a PhD student, is like this very weird encounter, or just like kind of surreal encounter you have, where it's just like those are definitely literary elements, yeah. Dude, like the looking over the edge of a deck that's being rebuilt definitely has some sort of like intrinsic meaning on like the restructuring of a person's life over fragile like circumstances or whatever, and the main character observing this happening in the professor's life, and then like they get into a shouting match over a fucking cat shit on the carpet, and like just like everything about that sounds like a surrealist novel.
It was very strange, and like there's other little elements that I like overlook with like the professor who was recording, his wife recently had like nearly chopped her fingers off in a wood saw incident with the boards. And
wow, yeah.
And then like I walk into the kitchen with, you know, when he's like showing me the house and he's like putting the water on, and then like all surfaces are covered with like sugar cookies, like what? At least 50 sugar cookies.
Now, hang on a second. Are you saying these would be funny things if they happened? Or are you saying this shit, like this cutting of the fingers, almost cutting the fingers off, and the sugar cookies actually happened?
Those were happening. But, you know, obviously I wasn't there when the finger cutting happened. That was like a week
ago.
Well,
no, of course not.
But like this shit all happened. And the sugar cookies were there. And I was like, oh, you know.
Okay. You get the right director and you could make this such a funny fucking scene of just like the going out onto the deck and like looking over and then going to get tea and then like the sugar cookies just sitting there and just having like no words happen or whatever, just like looking at the sugar cookies and like looking back or whatever, and the wife is just like continuing to type and record and stuff like that. Fuck, dude, that was funny. Yeah. Wow.
And I actually like, I was like, you know, so with the sugar cookies, like, oh, you want one? And I'm like, oh, you know. And he's like, yeah, they're probably not vegan. I'm like, yeah, yeah. And then he's like, but yes, you know, this was a surprise this morning. I woke up and she was just baking and she made all the sugar. So I'm like, all right, sure. Apparently she really likes to bake.
Man, you live some, but that's kind of what life is about, right? Is like you allow yourself to have these just like, oh, I'm curious, what's going on over here? And then you like go in and experience, and then you have like tea with your professor and meet their cat that's really loud, that shits a lot on rugs, and then their other cat who's much more well-behaved.
Yeah, so, and so like, and they had a beautiful wild house. Like it was very, very nice house. Like a very nice kitchen. And like they had like a sunroom with an indoor garden.
Wow, that's
very
cool.
Nice. Yeah, and they're talking about how like they wouldn't be able to have a house like this if not for living in Colombia. As in the
because
city,
it's like
the
cheaper.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really true.
Well, I assume you weren't in Colombia yesterday.
Yeah. But maybe they had lived in Colombia and saved a bunch of money or something. You know, there could be different ways to interpret.
Who knows? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't. Good story. I need to have more encounters like that where I just bump into a random person and walk with them back to their home. And like,
well, this wasn't a random person. These are people I know.
I mean, no, I know. But like, I'm like, man, I just gotta fucking meet people. I don't even know.
But it was all of that merely came from the fact that I was putting on the registration sticker on my license plate.
Man, wild. That's fun.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think both of us are kind of on a time schedule today. So let's knock one out and then we'll head home.
All right. So what do we want to do, Frank?
Well, so I had a big one that I was thinking about that I think could be really fun. I don't know how far we'd get. I don't have a lot of expectations about being able to sort of encompass all of it in one episode, but I think it could be a really interesting start to talk about. Are you familiar with Shadow and Bone?
The Netflix attempt to make Game of Thrones? That's how it was built.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, honestly, dude, I'd say it has more in common with Mistborn and Peaky Blinders.
Okay. That is a weird combo.
Yeah, it's a weird combo. It's such a good combo, dude. I'm only like an episode and a half in, but I love the vibes. All of the storytelling is like really well directed and stuff, and the costumes and everything are like amazing.
But is it like sexy, or is that, did they have to drop that for now?
No, it's not horny. It's not. I think there's definitely like people who have sex. Like one of the, like, I mean, here, you know what? Here's a sign of like what it is. There is a, in the first episode, like you meet like the leader of a thief's gang and a couple of very like, you know, sort of like significant members of that gang. And by the way, all of the casting is like, like, wow, like really, really good character. Like, you know, I don't know if it was the director knows how to direct people or something, but I mean, like
probably the casting
director. They're good actors, and you know, it's really good casting, really good actors, like, oh, like very good characterization. But there's like a brothel as part of like what they run as a thief's gang, and like very little like, you know, horniness shown there. So like, yeah, I don't think it's Game of Thrones. I think it's more like I think it's honestly more like Peaky Blinders. Okay. in what they're trying to do in terms of like making an engaging, you know, engaging characters and sort of like nasty work of, you know, the thief's gang is only part of the story. Like there's a lot, there's like kind of, it seems like it's a second main story that's going like parallel to the main character. But, and again, like I haven't seen a lot of it and I wish I had seen more, but like this is a show that I can't just like watch in my periphery, like all of the bullshit from CW. Like I actually want to like sit down and watch it, but that means I have to like do nothing else while I'm doing
it. You're so used to just and, like doing everything while watching The Arrow.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like being like, I don't know, is he fighting somebody? Yeah, probably.
I'm gonna shoot this arrow.
Was it his twin or something? Whatever. Yeah.
Look at my muscles.
That classic line, Oliver Queen, I'm gonna shoot this arrow. No, okay. But the reason why I brought that up was just like, so there is a certain kind of magic that shows up in like some fantasy worlds like Mistborn or like Avatar has this too. You have, I think Shadow and Bone is kind of like this, although I haven't gotten far enough in, but they have like names for different like people who have abilities, like a heart render or a you know, it's like the whole like you have a coin shot, right? Or a sniffer. I don't remember what they're called, the people who can repress or inflame emotions,
a smoker, you know,
stuff like that. Yeah, a smoker. You have you know, the a pewter arm, tin eye, like those are like, you know, these really cool, like very evocative names for specific abilities. And I wanted to do an episode where it's like, what would that be for Halume? And I would have to assume that it's built around the nine flow, but like, what are sort of these, we would need to make, I think, more physical connections to something. I think it'd be cool to do that. And I'm like I said, I don't have any expectation that we would finish it, but I think it'd be a fun thing to introduce and have like a, either a time, literally like have an entire avum that's devoted to this, or like that's a currently unknown avum,
to
like
devoted, maybe avum
septus or something. To each individual, like some individuals are born with special access to like these abilities, and these abilities have to do with their temperament.
We could link this into Orun, because remember Orun have quirks.
That's true. And so that's the thing, is I was like, do we do Orun? Do we do a different land? Do we do a different time in Orunian history? We could do that too. But like, I don't know, do you want to do an episode on that?
Sure, yeah.
All right, great. Well, this is an even number, so I think that's you. Been a little bit, I think, since you've done one.
Yeah, because we had like the double odd.
Yeah, there's like a double odd, and I think
we did the Evangelion thing where we had like 9 and 9.1 true.
Yeah. Hey, is I don't know if you've been looking for it, but is 3.33 back up yet? I don't know why, but it's just like the file is there, but Plex doesn't want to recognize it.
I haven't decided to dive into the Evangelions yet.
Okay, gotcha. Gotcha. Well, I need to get
here. Here's a question. Have you watched all of them? Right now?
Yeah, I saw the 26 and then the end of Evangelion. And then I went through and watched 1.11, 2.22, 3.33, and thrice upon
time.
Do
you recommend rewatching the anime and then diving into 1.1?
If you remember enough of it, I don't think you need to. 1.11 does a like sort of remixes a lot of, or not remixes really, 2.22 is more of a remix than 1.11 is, but also like fully like leaves the map of what's set up. 1.11 definitely, it's more like a,
so like a recap.
Now that we have all this technology, we can completely rebuild this this show and do it kind of the way we want to. It's a different show. It's interesting, like, to see the differences and stuff. Or it's an interesting movie. But like, I would say you don't need to go back and see the previous ones.
Because like, I remember most of the stuff, but like, I don't remember all of the specific angels. I don't remember.
Oh yeah.
You know, I don't remember exactly what happened with the like. Third casualty? I guess.
I mean. No, second casualty is us. You're talking about the third impact or whatever. We have the second casualty. That's us.
Okay, sorry. I'm getting too cross-fading here. Oof.
Yeah.
Too much weed.
Yeah, no, there's a... I mean, like, that's the thing is Evangelion's always been more of, like a character-focused experience piece than it has been just, like, a narrative. Like, you know, they just throw shit out, like, you know, the Bethany base or, like... Oh, you know, this is the key, like Solomon's Key or whatever. It's like, we've never seen any of this shit before, but sure, whatever.
Watch me pull this directly out of my ass.
Right. I mean, I know that like technically there is a reason and excuse and explanation of all of the lore of Evangelion. I think they're literally just like, I don't know, spoilers, I guess, potentially.
They're like,
but I'm pretty sure they're literally just like aliens from a different realm, like a different planet very far away, and like
alien?
The angels and the God doesn't exist in that way. I don't think there's like gods plural.
I know, like Adam, talk about Adam's a thing.
Yeah, Adam and Lilith.
Yeah.
So humans are apparently the Lilin. Wow, this is okay. Yeah, lots of spoilers. Did you ever watch the end of Eva?
I did not.
Okay, you should watch that before you do watch this. That's yeah, it's on Plex.
So should I just watch Death? True or just
Death Rebirth? No, I think I'm pretty sure Death Rebirth was just a recap. Like it was kind of like 1.11 was, but it was used with existing footage, so that was just them recutting what already was.
But Death True is like the combination of End of Evangelion and Death Rebirth.
I would just watch End of Evangelion, honestly. Like, I honestly, I don't know about Death Rebirth. I downloaded it. I never actually watched it.
Okay. So, End of Evangelion, so I can't then really 1.11, 2.22, 3.33.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just, and like, keep in mind the massive jump in time from the production of one to the production of the other, because, like, End of Evangelion, I think, came out a couple years after the original series.
When people were like, fuck the end of this series.
Yeah, and he was like, all right, you know what? Fuck me, no, fuck all of you. That's basically what that movie is. Just like, fuck you all to hell. Yeah. I hate you. You, the fans suck. Fuck all your characters that you love. It's really a something.
Okay.
But yeah. Anyways.